This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiologists' extended learning series featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You're about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, you will have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access to your mobile device. And each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/AXL. Listen now to a talk David Molinterno had with Seti Fogar, cardiology fellow at Rush University Medical Center in Chicago. They cover outcomes of transcatheter and surgical aortic valve replacement in patients with severe aortic stenosis and pulmonary hypertension.
Welcome. Tell us a little bit about the background. Why did you decide to look into this question?
So the reason why we decided to look into this question is because pulmonary hypertension is a condition that is common in a lot of patients with aortic stenosis. Anywhere from about 20 to 50% of patients with severe aortic stenosis also have concomitant pulmonary hypertension.
Now, is that secondary? There's differences, I know, types of pulmonary hypertension, but are these patients who have heart failure and as a result pulmonary hypertension or separate?
So in this study, we're looking primarily at patients with secondary pulmonary hypertension. We used the National Inpatient Sample Database, and with ICD-9 coding, it helps you to differentiate patients with primary and secondary. We looked at the entire cohort, but in the end, the patients who had severe aortic stenosis, only 3 out of the entire cohort of patients had primary pulmonary hypertension. All of them were secondary pulmonary hypertension. The only thing about this data set is that it doesn't tell you whether it's definitely from cardiac causes or whether it could be CTEV or as a result of chronic lung conditions. But only 3 out of the entire cohort was primary.
Got it. So all the rest are secondary, but it's not clear if it was pulmonary or thromboembolic or heart failure associated.
Exactly.
Tell us a little bit more about it. What did you find, or what were the main outcome measures you were analyzing?
So to do this study, what we did was we did a matched propensity match sample where we used baseline characteristics of the patients, age, sex, race, comorbidities, and we compared the people who underwent surgical aortic valve replacement versus transcatheter. Since this is a National Inpatient Sample Database, what we used is we looked at in-hospital outcomes. The most important one, of course, is inpatient mortality.
So in general, then, you've got a group of patients, aortic stenosis, pulmonary hypertension, and you're looking to see that they have surgery versus a TAV or procedure, and now you're going to look at inpatient outcome.
Yes. So when it came to the outcomes, the first was inpatient mortality. We found out that there was a significant benefit with regards to inpatient mortality when you compared patients who underwent TAV versus surgical valve replacement with an odds ratio of 0.57 with p-values of 0.024. We also then looked at other complications like respiratory complications and non-respiratory complications. When I'm talking about respiratory complications, I'm talking about reintubation, the need for tracheostomy, and need for non-invasive mechanical ventilation. All of these favored the TAV group. And the only complication which you'd say was more common in the TAV group as compared to the SAV group was the need for pacemaker placement.
That makes total sense and would be consistent then. Give the listeners a sense, what is the time interval for these patients to have been entered into the National Inpatient Sample? Is this 2011 to 2014 or a different interval?
So this was from 2012 to 2015.
It's 2012 to 2015, so likely patients who are mainly inoperable, but no, they're having an operation, so they can't be that. So these are then mainly high-risk surgical
patients. Exactly,
exactly. So their STS scores were likely elevated.
Were likely elevated. The only thing is, unfortunately, the National Inpatient Sample doesn't give us the STS score, but given the time period and the data and the approvals we had for TAVR at this time, this is most likely patients who underwent these interventions.
Sure, sure. I think it makes sense. We know that patients with pulmonary hypertension in general do worse than those without pulmonary hypertension when having, you know, thoracic-based surgery. So this sort of makes sense. I guess you wouldn't know the extent of their pulmonary hypertension, just basically enough that they have a diagnosis, right, of that.
Yes, and that happens to be one of the limitations of the study. Obviously, with the national inpatient sample, it doesn't give you hemodynamic data. So
Sure. What
you do have is just the diagnosis and the ICD-9 codes to go with.
Yeah, you'd like to believe, though, the patients who are deemed to be of highest surgical risk are going to be shunted toward TAVR.
Of course.
But we don't know that. That's speculative. But nonetheless, it's impressive. You said the odds ratio is around 0.6.
Exactly.
And so that's very impressive. So how would you, I guess, recommend or see this to the listener? How should they put this data into context into their practice, perhaps?
Okay. So the beauty of the national inpatient sample is that it's real-world data. So it tells you these are the real-world numbers. And if you have a patient who has some amount of pulmonary hypertension with associated severe aortic stenosis and you're trying to counsel them about their risk for undergoing aortic valve replacement, with these numbers, you can tell them that from national studies, we've seen that this is the outcome with surgical aortic valve replacement versus TAVR. So you can tell the patient this is what they may expect throughout their hospital course after the intervention has taken place.
Got it. So that makes sense. What would you do to take this forward, I guess, to be certain? Like we talked about, there's a number of elements that are missing from the national inpatient sample. So how would you prospectively say with the next study, whether it's an intermediate or lower risk patient cohort?
So in order to take this study forward, I think the main thing would be, one, not to reinvent the wheel. We could actually reach out to all the other studies that are going on, the CERTAVI studies and the other studies that are going on looking at low-risk patients and intermediate-risk patients. They already have the data that tells the about the patient's pulmonary hypertension and their pressures, and we could use that data. And there's also a lot of TAVR registries. And so using data from these registries, actually, we can look at the outcomes of these patients and see how they did prospectively.
Sure. That would make sense to use the STS or even something outside the United States, like the French registry or the German or the Ocean TAVI registry. I do think that looking at those would be helpful. What else do we need to think about? So I think it makes sense if a patient has pulmonary hypertension, the heart team probably takes that into account and may lean towards TAVR, particularly if someone has a particularly elevated pulmonary artery pressure. Any other takeaway messages for us?
The only other things we also looked at was essentially length of stay and also total hospital cost. And again, length of stay was much shorter with patients who underwent TAVR as compared to surgical replacement. And also overall, the cost benefits were much more in favor of TAVR as compared to surgical aortic valve replacement.
Well, that's terrific. I appreciate those insights, and I think this is a nice use for the national inpatient sample. We all know it has limitations of use describing an administrative database, just looking at inpatients and not being able to drill down completely on the diagnoses. But I do think this is helpful and a good step forward. So again, Dr. Fugar, thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/Axel.